Thank you, Chair. Just for the record, I am Albert and yourself, I'm the CEO of the National Research Foundation. We brought along a number of people from the organization and a number of board members that we haven't had in board meeting in Cape Town today. So it's an opportunity for them to meet you as a school board. So I'm going to ask the board members to chair the board, introduce yourself, and then board members introduce themselves and then the delegation.
Chair, I'm Robin Crew, interim chair of the NRF board.
Chair, I'm Paul
Patrick Thompson, Group Executive, HR and Stakeholder Relations, NRF.
Good morning, Melissa Vicher, Manager of Stakeholder Relations, NRF.
Prior to that,
I'll give you to read the presentation.
Thank you so much, Jeff. And I'm also aware of the time limits here, so I will push things along a little bit. If people feel that they're very quickly, please stop me. I'm happy to slow down a little bit quicker. I'm just watching the clock at the same time. So thank you, first of all, to my side, to yourself and the honorable members for having this opportunity to present to you our annual performance plan. We hope that it will be informative, but we quickly look forward to the questions from the board, which I'm sure we're going to get. This is just, the first slide. This is just a statement of intent, if you like, about what we're trying to do with the NRF, related to the NRF Act. To uphold excellence in all our investments, we want to contribute to the quality of life of the country, of people of the country, by promoting research, youth capacity, pipeline development, and supporting research infrastructure and research institutions across the country. We support people and projects to search for sustainable solutions to the many problems we face as a broader society, as we can. At the corporate level, of course, the point of reference is the NRF Act. I'm not going to repeat this, you're all familiar with this, but the idea is that we find human resource development, facilities, and the creation of knowledge in order to improve quality of life, and come directly from the agnostic to the point of departure for our conversation. We did develop a strategic plan in June 2015, and I'm not going to go into details here, but simply to say by leveraging our purpose, which is the Act, if you like, and the people and platforms that we embed with, we plan to deliver on a 5-point strategic goal. First of those is the International Competitive Science, Technology and Innovation System, the representative research and technical workforce of the country, the world-class science benchmarking and grant-making system, leading-edge research technology and innovation platforms, and a vibrant national science system to all collectively contribute to a prosperous and sustainable academic landscape in the future. So this is the Vision 2015 document, which has been in place in 2008 already now, so it's got a little bit of background. As part of Vision 2015, we've identified core competencies we'll be striving to deliver as an organization. Excellent grant maintenance systems, using peer evaluation processes and systems to provide strategic research information and information management and disseminate that, provide research platforms, provide science and technology management expertise. We do promote development of specialized research capacity, and we act as catalysts for local and international research collaboration and science advancement across the organization. This is our detailed slide, and I think you'll see it probably better in your presentations in front of you or on the regional performance plan. But essentially it highlights the evolution, if you like, of Vision 2015 in terms of the five strategic goals and some of the key indicators that are related to those. We set goals for ourselves as long ago as 2007-2008 about what we're trying to achieve as an organization. You'll see those long-term goals in the far right-hand column, and then our progress up to date in terms of achieving them. You'll see that the progress in some of them, we've already exceeded some of the 2015 targets and some of the indicators. In some of them, we still have a lot of work to do to catch up. The progress is not even across all the KPIs, but we are aware of some of the challenges that we have to tackle, and we're going to be working in the next couple of years to make sure that we achieve as many of these KPIs as possibly can by the time 2015 runs it up. But I think these are the high-level performance indicators, if you like, of the organization that we're striving to do to achieve in order to fundamentally shift the system to make the effectiveness of our system. Some of those are just summarized in these slides. There's a progress on some of those key indicators. The left-hand one is the number of South African IRI publications. We've got projections in there for the next couple of years. Certainly this indicator is growing very rapidly. But then, of course, the international science system is also growing rapidly. And so we're running against people that are running sometimes slightly faster than we are and sometimes not. But I can report that our rate of increase since 2007 till now in terms of IRI publications is the fourth highest in the world. Behind India, Brazil, and China. So the BRICS countries essentially are leading the charge, and we're keeping up with it for them in terms of increasing our science outputs in the future. On the right-hand side, you'll see some of the other performances. The number of NRF-rated researchers has grown dramatically over this period. The doctoral students we support have grown dramatically over this period. The black-rated researchers have grown, but painfully slowly. We're still struggling in this area, to be honest. As an area that we're going to have to concentrate on as hard as we can to push the envelope. And the female rate of research is also growing, but not fast enough for my life anyway. we do it. Functioning as a teaching context and organization, and the grants, the national legislation that we comply with, the R&D strategy of 2002, the 10-year innovation plan from the DSD, and of course even the Department of Higher Education and Training funding framework that sets certain transformational goals for the system that we have tried to engage with. And at a much broader government level, of course, the 12 outcomes of government are particularly important to us, and we will. And the next slide is just summarizing essentially the areas for both the DST and the NRS, or collectively we can make contributions to the 12 outcomes of government in the future, either directly, so the colored dots, or indirectly, as you see in the white dots on this diagram. So it gives you an indication that we have a broad influence, if you like, in the system that we can exert. We, of course, fund as a National Research Foundation, primarily the fundamental research, some applied research. And we engage with our sister agency, the Technology Innovation Agency, who funds downstream activities more towards the product development commercialization side of the activities. That trip program you see there in the middle is sort of a transition mechanism that we have between the two to try and stimulate mutual engagement and interaction between fundamental research on the one side of the university sector and the industry and other partners on the right side of the trip. It gives you a sense of the space in which we operate. And critically important, you'll see the national facilities at the bottom there also operate across a very broad space. We do invest our money according to the strategic guidelines that you see over time. Of course, one has to grow your investments over time. This is some of the historic investments in the grand challenge areas, bioeconomy, energy security, global change, and human and social dynamics as part of the 10-year innovation plan. And you'll see the projected growth in those areas in the future also contained in the particular graph. We look at the areas of geographical advantage, which is part of the R&D strategy. These are our historic and future investments in those areas. Some of them have grown quite nicely. Others, I think one would like to have more resources to really make them a significant input. And I must say that we're delighted about recent developments that are taking place in the area of paleo sciences, as well as the indigenous knowledge systems, where we've grown substantially the investment into the future. We're still a little bit concerned, but I don't think we're making enough impact in the area of Arctic research. So this is an area where numerous departments have to come together to make sure that we deliver as effectively as we can in that area. So this is one of the areas that I think we need to be focusing. As far as the Astro Geosciences Grand Challenge is concerned, these are the investments for SALT, which is the International Consortium Telescope around Canada Sutherland, and in the SAO itself. The Astronomy Research Chairs Investments, the NAS Program for Student and Human Capital Development in Astronomy, and then Human Capital Development in Multi-Wave Astronomy, which is the Multi-Wave Astronomy Investments. Give you a sense of the scale of the investments that are really and what we foresee in the near future in terms of increasing our investments. As for geosciences, of course, what I can't talk about that without talking about the big SKA project. These things are essentially the same as the previous one, it just includes the SKA at this time around, and give you a sense of the scale of the SKA investment that we're making, which is substantial. Of course, primarily in the construction phase of the NEPCAT equipment, so that's not unexpected, but it is important to get a sense of the scale of that investment. We're talking in order of 600 million rand, you know, on average per year for a period of time to get that going. Whereas for most of the other astronomy investments, we're talking about 6 million rand, about an order of magnitude difference, so just to give you a sense of the scale. And this is emphasizing that again, the SKA investment on the right, far right hand side for the construction of Meerkat, and then all the national facilities collectively on the left hand side, so they're more or less in the same order of magnitude in terms of the total investment that takes to run. So this summarizes the funding baseline for the NRF for between 2013 and 2015-16. We'll see that the increase in 2013-14 is set to 4.6%. This includes ring-fenced allocations for global change science, growth investments, as well as the SKA project into the future. And I just want to say that this is according to the NTF collector as received on 31st of January. Well, the one thing that we're delighted about, and I want to point that out to members, you see in the bottom two columns there, the contract and the baseline funding, which is the NGF location funding. The projection is that in 2015-16, the baseline funding will actually exceed the contract funding. if the contract economy isn't growing much, which is a positive development as far as we're concerned. I think it gives us more flexibility in terms of effectiveness and efficiency of spending. And we're working very hard with the colleagues of the Department of Science and Technology to get that thing sorted out. Our total expenditure for 13-14, as projected through our budgets, for research, the groundbreaking side of the business is 59%, the National Research Facility 16%, Science Advancement 3%, the SKA itself is a 19% of the total investment. Special projects, which include the EXU Regional Office for Africa internship programs and the Research Information Management System, 1%, and then the corporate expenditure is 2%. Gives you a sense of where the money is going. We invest according to principles. We try and achieve a balance between strategy, investments, and bottom-up demand-driven research on the academic community. We always fund through competitive merit-based funding. We always have taken into account the transformation goals and imperatives that we have in the country. And fairness, transparency, and accountability is the basis on which we award to all our applicants. We want to try and ensure that we improve our service delivery as an organization to that community, and we believe in the relationship of expertise between that community and the funding organization, and the PSD is regarded as an important driver of our system. So this gives you some idea as to where we focus our investments. You'll see that the budget allocation has increased by 4.6%. We are under pressure in terms of salary settlements, which is all on the go. And we anticipate that the total cost of the company so that may exceed the total allocation that we've got in the staff. But that doesn't mean that we can sit back. We have to do things and improve our internal efficiencies in the organization. And these are some of the measures that I'm not going to read to all of them that you can see that we're working on at the moment to make sure that we can cut our costs and streamline the overhead in the organization to make sure that we don't lose track on the grant that's available to the research community at the end of the day. Right at the bottom, there are two things that are important. We're going through a research grant-making renewal exercise at the moment to reposition the organization as a client-centric organization to make sure it becomes focused more clearly on service delivery and the national facility to be developing sustainability plans for everyone in the independent to make sure that they can grow in a sensible manner into the future. As far as our human resources and organization are concerned, we introduced in the last year a comprehensive human resource plan as part of this research renewal strategy that I spoke about towards client centricity. The staff plan that we're going to put in place together with the succession plan that's associated with it deals with sustainability and the transformation issues in terms of retaining our expertise but at the same time making sure that we shift the demographic balance of the organization. Particularly in pockets where we are concerned. We don't have a broad concern on this issue, but in pockets of our organization that we have to focus on in this regard. We're driving employment equity and transformation through our employment equity plan that's available in stretches for 2015. And we've launched a management development program for our staff in partnership with Stellenbosch University for the next 3 years to keep training people in the broad area of science management. So you feel that something that's happened historically through the process of osmosis in our system as a whole, and we have to formalise this. And the partners at Stellenbosch University have come on board to help us with formal qualifications and make it easier for us, hopefully, to employ people in the future. About the various divisions of the NRF, the first of those, the groundbreaking side of the business, or RISA, as it's known, Research Innovation Support Enhancement. One of the major developments is that we received ministerial guidance for improving equity in the distribution of NRF bursaries and fellowships in January 2013. This gives an indication of the demographic targets and the levels of investment that we have to pursue as an organization. And these are now being worked into our funding cycle for 2013-14 to make sure we comply with those. So at the same time, we're not just looking at who we award bursaries to, but also at the increase of bursary value. So that will also be an announcement about that in the future to this community. So the income for the groundbreaking side of the business in the total right-hand column, you'll see it's projected to increase dramatically over this 6-year period from about 1 billion to 2 billion. So you can see there's a dramatic increase that's happening. Part of that comes in MTF designated income, and part of it comes in terms of other designated income increases at this point in time. But you can see that there is a strong intent, both on the DST as well as on the Treasury, to grow our investments in the human capital development areas of the organisation and the science funding areas of the organisation into the future. And I'm really delighted about that because I think it speaks to a core issue in the science system, and that's that the scale of the science enterprise needs to be set. It's just too small to really make the kind of global impact we want, and I think we increased investment both in terms of SKA and the facilities, but also in terms of the environmental side of the business. It's critical for us to step up the scale of the science enterprise role. This gives you an indication of the different categories of investment: next generation, emerging researchers, some cross-cutting investments, which include international programs, where we promote internationalization of our system, together with the SIP program, where we promote the interaction with industry through the DTI, the support for established researchers, and the support for strategic investments. And those strategic investments include the research chairs, which we are fully aware of, the growth in the area of centers of excellence, that are all under that banner, and we're delighted about the extensive investments that you can see that are anticipated in those particular areas in the near future. As far as the next generation research is concerned, we have a number of instruments, freestanding scholarships, grant holder link scholarships, we have other targeted development grants that focus on women scientists and black scientists in the system to grow the numbers as best as we can, and the 2PA deep track is something, an instrument that we feel we need to increase the investments if we possibly can, but we're working on that so we can find the resources. Slide 28 gives you a sense of the numbers of students we anticipate to support. If you want an eagle's eye view of the whole slide, irrespective of whether you're talking at BTEC honors level or whether you're talking at a postdoctoral level, we anticipate that over the 7-year period or so, into 2015-16, you'll essentially see a doubling of the number of students that are being supported in every one of those categories. So it'll give you a sense of the growth of investment that we spoke about a little bit earlier. And the more people we can support, of course, the better for our system in this regard. As far as the emergent researchers are concerned, we have a number of instruments again that they can apply for and can compete for. Freestanding postdocs, grant leveling postdocs, the TUCA postdoc track, TUCA rating track, and some other emerging grants that I spoke about earlier, the targeted investments for black and moon scientists, and then competitive funding for unrated research. All of those they can apply for. And of course these cross-cut instruments that I mentioned earlier, the one that promotes the interaction with industry, the SIP program, and the one that promotes interaction with international partners, international collaborations, are available to researchers of all standards. In other words, from pre-PhD to very senior researchers. They can all apply for these instruments at the end of the day. And so it adds some additional resources, if you like, to every one of the pots of investments that we talked about. Established researchers, incentive funding for rated, you can see the kind of investment we envisage there. Competitive funding for rated researchers, an area that we'll talk about a bit later. Focused research grants is the focus area investments which have been faded out, and you can see the consequence of that fade out of that investment because it's been replaced by other instruments over time. The blue sky research is an area that we will have some degree of funding, but it's never going to be a huge investment area. It's going to be something that's going to be refocused. And the funds for kind of research that are unlikely to be funded under many of the other programs. Really the high risk research stuff that's likely to reap tremendous rewards if we invest in that area, and so we do focus on that as well. The equipment program, something that where you can see a steady growth in funding. There's a decline, but that's really due to the once-off huge investment that was made in 2010 and 11. In the area of equipment. You see that the long-term trend is still upwards and upwards trajectory, but that the once-off injection into the system made a substantial difference, and we were delighted to receive that, of course, but if we can receive more of that, then the system can grow a lot quicker. But we have to also think about the other priorities in the system at the same time. I'm not going to run through the details of the research performance targets. They are in your performance plan. But I wanted just to indicate to you that besides the high-level performance targets that I showed you in the very early slide, there's detailed performance targets for every one of the business units. This is now for the grant-making side of the business. We're trying to promote, looking at the 5 strategic goals of the organization, there are targets set for every one of these deliverables at the end of the day. And then it goes on the continuation slide, and this one just some more details, and we'll be happy to respond to any questions that people might have about any of these targets and what we're trying to achieve there. Some of the challenges we have to face in terms of the ground making side of the business. I mentioned earlier we're trying to shift PISA away from a perception, if you like, of being a government-driven sort of bureaucratic application process to something that's fundamentally client-centric in the way that we operate, in the way that it functions. We always strive for improved client centricity, improved service delivery, improved efficiency, and continuous improvement in that regard. And this is one of the major rethinks that we're having as part of that part of our businesses. We do have, obviously we can spend more, we get more in terms of funding. We do only fund a small proportion of all the students that do postgraduate work in the country, somewhere between 15% and 7%, depending on what kind of qualification you're looking at, is the degree of funding we inject into the system. And this is why we think the issue of scaling up the R&D enterprise that we spoke about earlier is fundamental to changing the system and the impact of the system on our national site. We are engaging with the Department of Higher Education and Training and EST to improve the alignment of the investments across. We have regular bilaterals with all of them now to make sure that our instruments actually speak to one another and they don't compete. And that's a significant step forward. We're delighted by the degree of collaboration we've received in that regard. And of course, we're engaging with National Treasury as well to make sure that the initial, the required investments are in place as soon as possible. But of course, we have to take into account the international and national economic realities. We have received some indication that there may be additional human capital development funding in the, on top of the one you see in the budget here in the next financial year already, so that's a really positive development. In the area of science advancement, SASTA's income on the next slide gives you a sense that it's growing over time. The problem is that the vast majority of the organization is all driven by the designated contracts that they receive. And it does create a problem. It means you can't plan well in advance, and I think it affects our execution. And we've been engaging with the department about ways to improve the scenario moving ahead. We've appointed David Amanta as a group executive for science advancement in the organization to reposition science advancement across all of our business units to say how we can leverage all our investments more effectively to promote science advancement in general. And Debbie is working on a strategic framework as far as that's concerned. She's already submitted that draft framework to the DST, and there are some conversations on the go between the department and us about making sure science advancement actually responds to a strategic intent and doesn't happen in a traditional fashion, as it has happened sometimes in the past. We're also engaging with the higher education institutions, science councils, and industry about a collective approach towards science advancement rather than a highly fragmented one. Beverly is going to be working with that sector to develop a public engagement agenda for everybody in the sector, the science centers, the higher education institutions, science councils. She's focusing on the development of the science advancement platform that we have direct access to, the National Zoological Gardens Life Sciences Center and the Johannesburg Observatory. And she continues to engage with the national facilities to increase their science advancement profile and footprint. We have implemented a tracking system for student interventions in the area of science advancement, and that was the first time we get a sense of what really the impact of these engagements are. And it's a very complicated exercise, but it's something that we'll be following in some international benchmarks that have been established around the world to bring that into our system, so we get a sense of what the return on investment is there. We're working towards strengthening international collaborations and reducing the number of contracts in science advancement areas so that we can plan more effectively and spend more effectively for impact. Slide 39 gives you a sense of the KPIs for science advancement that have been set, and I want to just emphasize the little block at the bottom where Minister Anacom has asked us, together with the ZFT.
Sorry, it's gone wrong.
It looks like there's something misnumbered in there. Yeah. Nice. So I will try not to refer to the numbers. Sorry, Chair. No, that's unforgivable. Sorry, I didn't notice that. Thank you very much. I will refrain from mentioning that. But ministers asked us to focus on the optimal positioning, running, and funding of science advancement across the national system of innovation. And these conversations are focusing on that at the moment. There are some challenges in the area of science advancement. We're still working with the DST to think about how or whether we should include science advancement in the NRF Act. I think hopefully that will be dealt with in this coming year. It seems to be on the agenda for us to conclude that exercise. National strategy development for science advancement is ongoing work. We have talked about the scaling up of the research enterprise with our colleagues at DST and Treasury, and we're giving that due attention. And we're developing our national platforms for science advancement as best as we possibly can. We've just announced a research chair in science communication in order to make sure that we have real national capacity in this regard, and we still need to improve our core funding baseline. And then there's a very exciting proposal called the Mazandi for Science Project, which is really about a public engagement exercise, like from the science sector as a whole, all the science councils, universities, and us together with the Department of Science and Technology, to increase the public understanding of the benefits and the value of science for society as a whole. I think it's something that we have to do, and something that we have to pay due attention to. And of course, we're also focusing on national facilities and helping leverage the national facilities to improve the science advancement abilities in the future. Our national facilities, at the moment, we have a group executive for astronomy sciences, and that development is going really well. I think we're very excited about some of the recent developments there. We do still have a vacancy in the area of research for the other national research facilities. This has been held back at the moment in terms of filling that vacancy primarily because we need to get clarity about the positioning of some of the research facilities of these national facilities in the future. There's some conversations that some of them may be better placed elsewhere in the science system, and we're happy to engage with those conversations. I think placing facilities where they ought to be is what we should be doing, and we will be engaging with the DST and the Minister in a manner that we outlined a little bit later that I'll get back to. In terms of the income of these facilities at the moment, as we get a sense of the next graph, the designated and other income, this is really income that they do by providing services. In Tembo Labs, you'll see as a significant income due to isotope sales that they sell it internationally. And the net energy, of course, has significant data, you can see as part of the income streams for those particular areas. SAO, of course, runs the SALT telescope on behalf of the international community, so that it gets some external income from that particular source. These are major KPIs that are set for the next couple of years for the national research facilities. And right at the bottom there is this statement by Minister Hanekom that we will consider the appropriate placement of the national research facilities and will identify a mindful phased approach to any changes that will be in the national research. And I think this is really what we're trying to do to ensure that we get the best return on investment on all our facilities as we move ahead. Society facility investments, we've also invested in equipment at those facilities. I think what's important here is that we through the DST have come to realize that we have to support our existing national facilities to make them current and make sure that the cutting edge of the activities they're involved with. And we'll see that over the last couple of years and moving ahead, we will continue these investments in those national facilities on a periodic basis. It's not a huge amount of money, but it's money that didn't exist previously. It's about an order of about 20 million rand a year that we spend on these facilities, and of course we prioritize and develop invest on a sporadic basis, as you can see there. But it is an important new instrument that's not available to us that didn't exist a few years ago. And I think it's placed these facilities in a much sounder footing than they were at least 3 or 4 years ago. Some of the highlights from the facility for your information. This year we're celebrating the 75th anniversary, if you like, of the rediscovery of the coelacanth in the Eastern Cape. It's the Albert Smith Institute in those days, now called the South African Institute of Aquatic Biodiversity. And just to let all the PC members know that we are going to have our national awards function this year in Port Elizabeth as a city. We will be inviting the PC members to join those that are going to be there. One of our strategies is to move that function around the country to make sure that different communities get involved. So sometime in September, you can anticipate an invitation from us pretty soon to join us if you happen to be in that area. We'd be delighted to see you there. We're making significant progress on the SK Meerkat construction. The civil works are now really flying, and we still think we're going to have our first antenna of the Meerkat up and running, the demonstration antenna, if you like, of the offset dish up and running by the end of the year. Science Salt Sutherland is now fully functional and operational. The science has been churned out of there, and we're delighted that after many years of investment, this now we have a fully functional telescope that can be used by the international community. TEMBO has improved and expanded the collaboration with NETA in terms of isotope sales and in terms of joint ventures to supply critical radioisotopes in the medical community in the Western Cape and the rest of the country. And you'll see that there's a contract that's been signed between TEMBO Labs and Tigerberg Hospital, and also throughout Curtis Team conversations on the go at the moment. Very positive developments in the community about collaboration rather than opposition. And then SAON, collaboration with National Parks. The interesting development is that we've managed to secure an additional research vessel to be used for inshore research work from the National Parks. It was underutilized in their capacity in terms of their mandate, and they were delighted to make this available for student training and other purposes. And SAON is the base from which they will be operating. So we've seen our inshore research capabilities by getting an additional vessel from National Parks and the collaborative venture. Some of the issues we have to deal with the facilities, we do have a national skills base limitation in some areas. Would you like me to?
No, continue. I'm just saying that members should understand that the is what they're trying to stop. And continue.
Thanks, Minister. We have to develop our skills base in some areas. We put a number of interventions in place, and I've listed them there for you, to make sure that we grow our skill base in those areas, including the PDPs with professional development program, where we place people at a postdoc level at research facilities for a period of up to 3 years, which fully salaries, in other words, it's got no implication for the budget of the facilities that take these people on board, to make sure that we grow people into the system that we need as aggressively as we possibly can. And then aging equipment and infrastructure is always an issue, but we have implemented a long-term infrastructure plan for all the facilities. We managed to minimize any disruptions in operations by the investments that I showed you a little bit earlier. And we prioritize resource commitments to sustain projects into the future on those platforms. I think what's important here is we move from an environment where we're trying to fix things from a clean environment where we're starting to make strategic investments to make them more and more competitive. And I think that's a very positive development. Stop there, I'm not I'm just about done. That's it. Okay, so we will
not engage you on this last one because nobody has done
it. Fair enough. The infrastructure investments, I think the idea is that we shifted from a landscape where we were trying to do fixings and make things work to a landscape where we're really making strategic investments and making them more and more internationally competitive. So it's a very positive shift in terms of the mindset of what's happening in those facilities over the last few years. And I think it's a good place to be. The access and use of facilities, of course, we encourage the higher education sector to use these facilities as part of their extended infrastructure. And we also have to think about the new national facilities in the future. We can't, across the international science landscape shifts over time, and we have to make sure that we remain competitive. And so some of the national facilities that we currently have may be better based elsewhere in the landscape, and we're happy to have those conversations. But at the same time, we also have to think about what are the new areas we should be investing in to make sure our science system remains competitive. And some of those activities I listed will help us to define those areas of investment into the future. So, in conclusion, from our side, we'll notice overall growth in NI funding that reflects positively on the prioritization of research and innovation within the national system of innovation. Grant making is streamlined through joint planning between the NRF and the DSP, and we're grateful for the collegial and interactive and collaborative work we managed to establish, working relationship we managed to establish with the Department of Science, Technology in this regard. we're all acutely aware of the need to scale up R&D system as a whole, together with the DST and Treasury, and having those conversations with them about how do we get there. The science advancement area requires an overarching national strategic framework to elevate its impact in the system, and the strategic positioning of the National Research Facility is ongoing. This includes future planning for facilities, including the roadmap and also exercises where we work into the future. And Chair, that's the end of my presentation. Thank you very much.
Percentage of standards is the position you like, but elsewhere is more than made up by the department of X, Y, or Z. There's a problem both ways, but I don't know if that's the case. On slide 15, SKA project construction investment, I mean, that sharp decline, presumably it's just because of the initial step. But it's got to do with the longer term step. So you would imagine that comes down now, and as soon as we start proper, SKA proper is going to rock up again, which the other slide shows later, the end of the year, in the future. On slide 16, the cutting, I mean, I'm trying to surprise you, I don't know what it means. The cutting edge research equipment investment showed a fairly sharp decline in the future. The reason for that was taken up somewhere else. From slide 17, you speak to certain funding being ring-fenced. You ring-fence the global change science plan implementation and also SKA. Maybe SKA, I can understand, but why is anything ring-fenced? I mean, surely the way you would operate is that you sort of need and fund those needs as you could. Is there a history behind the ring-fencing? Perhaps the transfers this year or whatever. On slide 24, it speaks of the ministerial guidelines for proving equity in the distribution of your grants, your bursaries. And I assume that speaks to the problem that you mentioned of that being able to be too low. But then my question would be, how does that compare to slide 19? Because slide 19, your starting point here is that it's competitive merit-based funding system. Now, of course, you've got to take consideration into account. Then you come along with a specific target. How do you marry those two approaches? They can be in conflict. I'm not saying they are, but they could be. On slide 87, there are five categories of funding there. And you speak to the first four, but not the last one. And then as you finish your conclusion, I noticed I've got one slide sitting by itself, confusing the business. So I suppose that's the missing one. That's good at the end. And again, then, targeted strategic investments and sucking down. And the rest are sharply up. In fact, there's a trend, the minute you grasp, and perhaps there's very simple reasons. Well, some of them have very sharp times, some of them are down, some are flat. You don't have much time, but even if you take this one alone, this is slightly different. Well, look at the next generation, very sharp, up. And then especially with strategic investments, a huge leap there. Is that sustainable funding going to the long term, or these represent sort of interventions for the next couple of years to get you onto a new level and then look again? On slide 39, I'm looking at the numbers, the targets versus the actual figures and so on. And that must be pretty logical. It's not with a certain number which increases to the right, but consistently. Occasionally you get a sort of anomaly, like a master's student drops from 13, 14 to 14, 15, goes down. I don't understand that fine. The postdoctoral is static for 2 years, where every other year it increases. I imagine there's a reason for that. Slide 43, you've got the vacancy you refer to the CEO and the central instructor. I assume it's an acting person there, or maybe not, but how long has it been vacant? And then last, but not least, on slide 45, if you look at the bottom of slide 45, it talks about the student supervised by the staff with all these facilities, and the actual numbers in 2010, 272, 272, so the bottom row, fourth column, whatever it is actual in 2011, 272. The target in 2015 is 297. Well, that's about a 10% increase over 5 years, which seems very low to me. I would have thought you would have a much higher, more ambitious targets than that. Very lastly, slide 50, you talk about the need for an overarching national strategic framework for science advancement. What's being done to address that?
Thank you. I've introduced my questions. I'm going to start with some of my questions. On page 8, my page, some of the problems in most cases are lower than the actual performance. I'm not being good at interpreting tables, but if you could explain to me, how do you determine your targets? On my slide 10, must be your slide 11, or 10, 14, you refer to the world factor throughput of the NRDF under excuse. And you also refer to, on my page 20, underway the targeting or the package rating, you list that on page 38. You can give some more background on that and why now? Why not in the past and exactly what, how are you dealing with this tracking process? Then, on my 10, the outcome, the first one is improved quality, basically. And I would like to know that he was in involvement, Dr. Tulane knows my text subject, education, and I see already the basis of science and knowledge. And I would also like to refer you to your performance plan on page 17, in this regard, you, at page 18, you refer to when the bullet on indigenous knowledge, the third column, and specifically referred to specifically in areas of food, health, education, and physical development. Could you please also give me some more background for that? And then there's a further page, which is supposed to be page 74 in your flat. And I'm just going to record the sentence. If NRF spreads the message of trying to learn how to use it and how successful they are. On my page 15, you refer to the investment in this SKA, which is substantial, for reasons that it is in its construction phase. It is going to be, because on the following page, you refer to the 90% of the budget. It is the operation and obviously maintenance of the SKA is going to improve. What is the situation there on the budget? Then on my page 39, your page 38, your last bullet is the reduced numbers of contracts. I don't think you focus on that because it's when the chair indicated that there is a difference in the page numbers. My page 41 is yours. 42, you refer to the new research chair in science communication. Where exactly is this established at this university? You specifically refer to the value of science for social development or whatever, but heard you correctly. I'm particularly interested in that research too. And yes, the other question, my final question is, you refer to the first dish of the method. Now, I'm aware of the fact that the design of the cat 7 dishes differ from the first or from the NEPA. We see a little more information on that. And you said at the end of the year, are you going to invite all subject committee to go to take the visit to the event? Thank you.
Yeah, one was on the female range from. I remember the last time I asked about your target, what was the specific target on the gender thing? And then what strategy do you get in place to make the past the gender? And in terms of the indigenous knowledge, you said it's growing, but can you maybe elaborate on the how part of the growth?
Thank you. First, we're going to support the rest of the members. You said you are going to look into moving away from the bureaucratic processes of government. To a more science-led organization. Because
Thank you.
haven't been able, I would like to put in some context to clarify a thing that's like it. Because I see I saw that this is, for instance, people's much to do with creating assembly exercises and investments. Then I'm verifying it from this slide. How are you involved in changing? And on slide 43, other nation says facility starts. I see all the other and there. See what the general CEO and then under him is deputy CEO researching what the national research facility with a big impulse. While if they can come to assess, for instance, solar or gas and solar actual work, it's not okay for him. And the CEO is completely different astronomy. Second man, what is the second man that needs? Yeah, and I see also under that we can check with your position was present in our position for the number of reporting clusters there and which are very significant and very important. How does the social policy for the aid? Otherwise, let me also commend you for it's a very good presentation what you said. We have some experience in the recent past for people coming from the partners or entities simply have not prepared themselves. We are very many people take Parliament for granted. If you have not done the work, you are able to see. And if you have done good work, you are going to see yourself. Actually, I look through this and I write also the whole thing. The presentation talks, which is a very different opportunity. We do not see anything about the economy. So that's very important. I think you are the good one, you must have one. Thank you. I think you can answer.
Jay, thank you very much for that, and thank you for the positive feedback as well. I'll certainly transfer to the team that is responsible. Our job is to inform Parliament about what you're doing, and I hope to get your message across as best as we possibly can. I'll try and run through some of these. I'm going to ask some of my colleagues who should have noted down areas of questions in their particular areas of expertise in the context of the organisation. I'll ask them to come on board. The first question was about the vacancy rates from one more member. I wonder whether I can ask my colleague Patrick Thompson to respond to that. There are a few issues around that that we'd like to respond to. Patrick, can you have it?
Yeah. Thanks, Albert. Thanks, Honourable Member, for the question. As of the 31st of January, the actual staff numbers for the NRF were 1,222. We are planning from the 1st of April to have 1,374 positions. This will therefore represent a vacancy rate of around about 11.1%. Most of the vacancies are in the area of the SKA because of the ramp-up activity towards the City 4 districts. Most of the vacancies will be in the area of skilled technical people. I wonder whether the short response deals with your question adequately. If not, then we will do the deal
more. Thank you. That's for the moment, but I think if I can request that we can maybe just get some formal documentation on so that we can then
Let's say we will make available to you our staff plan once it's approved by the board.
Thank you. The next question is about the biodiversity sector, what's going on in terms of our relationship. This is an area of investment that we, of course, do not fund on our own. The number of other departments involved, environment affairs and even water affairs and so on. So, but we are focusing on investing in those areas where we feel the system is unfunded. The historic areas of investment, like fundamental systematics and taxonomy, is an area that's underfunded, and of course we support two of the national facilities that speak to. Thank you, I appreciate that. But so that's an area that we do invest in. There are some areas of concern that we've raised with the department, and we in conversations with the Department of Arts and Culture about is the management of our national biodiversity collections, and so that's something that we actually from the RF Commission to study to set the present state of our national collections. And I know that there are ongoing conversations between the Minister of Environment and the Council of Arts and Culture about how do we actually deal and unravel that problem, because it's a fundamental resource that we're concerned about. So we do fund competitive funding in the area of biodiversity resources, but we also focus on areas where we feel there's a critical need for us to make an intervention in that regard. So I think that's the strategy that we use as far as biodiversity funding is concerned. And of course, remember that biodiversity funding also has a strategic innovation component. In other words, looking for the new products and the new pharmaceuticals, if you like, that we can pull out of the biodiversity sector. And that's just an area that the Department of Science and Technology is invested in the historic biodiversity sector. The question about black and women PhDs and how we deal with that problem and the demographic problem in terms of our science workforce. You have seen at the NRF we've always funded our postgraduate students according to demographic targets. In other words, our ideal is to fund students in the proportion to our national demographic realities. So that is what we try and do. It is not always achievable in terms of actually rolling out the funding to make sure that we can actually get there. So we have to push really hard to get there. What we do is all the students that we fund at the end of the day go through a peer review system. We get feedback from their supervisors. Other people say, can these people do the work? Would you fund them if it's your money sort of thing? And we get a sense from them. The idea is that we fund people that are capable of doing the higher degrees at the end of the day. That for us is the fundamental benchmark. Not just determined by us or determined by the student, but determined by the people that those students are married with. In other words, they tell us that these are people that are worth investing in. And so we support on their places as best as we possibly. Sometimes we miss the demographic targets a little bit in a particular year because applications are just skewed. Other years we actually achieve them. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag in terms of how do we get there. Attention, as you spoke about, the excellence versus demographic targets are managed in that sense. That our minimum requirement is to make sure that the people we ask say to us, this person is somebody that should be investing in his life to complete it. At the end of the day, and then we'll contribute to the capacity to pool at the end of the day. So it's a difficult thing to manage. Our people are really, have become very good at professionals at doing that and pushing the envelope as hard as we possibly can without underfunding excellent students from other demographic groups in the process. And so it's a difficult label, but something that we try and manage as best as possible. You've also asked about the PhD production line. In other words, we support that according to the demographic targets and according to the, of course, now the new directive we've got from the Department of Science and Technology in that regard. So that's what we try and do. Yes, in the long run, the investment should deliver for us a workforce that's more demographically appropriate than what we have at the moment. The major hurdle that we encounter, though, is that the absorption rate of those candidates into the system as working scientists seems to be the area where the blockage is. some of the other members of this particular, what are you doing to make sure that we try and unblock that pipeline problem that we have there? And many of the interventions from the Department of Science and Technology, I spoke a little bit about areas of investment where there's been tremendous growth in investment in support of women and black scientists in the system for professional development purposes, for career awards, and other investments that are targeted at placing those people within the research environments at Science Council, but also at our national facilities, but also at the same time in the higher education sector. So what we're doing is now, you know, our traditional interventions in the higher education sector were focused on the strategic investment, the research chairs, the centers of excellence. What we're doing now is making a substantial investment at the lower end of people, allowing people the opportunity to grow their CVs and their careers so they can become competitive and get absorbed into their job market much more effectively. We felt there was a little bit of a dip after the post-doc funding and lots of people disappeared out of the system before they were actually absorbed in the labor market. And of course the other forces that pull people to commerce and other things at the same time, and our translation rate, if you like, of those people into the academic environment is not enough. So many of our investments now in emerging research environments trying to target that, say, how do we increase that supply and make it possible for people to establish a strong CV so that they can actually absorb, say, 5 years down the line. So that's why the focus on emerging research is so important for us. I think if we don't manage that transition, we're not going to get the kind of impact in the system.
There was a question about the good news, the fish now with the continue and stop. Not only that, we catch them at the end.
There were some questions about the startups and how we manage that in our environment. This is something through the third program that I guess is sort of the tips of our fingers as an organization in terms of our area of influence. This is really the space in which the key of technology innovation agency plays. But we try and manage and transfer projects that come from our environment and including into that environment so that they get transferred from the NRA into the technology innovation agency, which can really co-invest in terms of the idea of startups. What I can tell you from my experience, and maybe the chair of the project board in better position to answer this line, is that many of the universities are pushing the innovation angle in terms of the postgraduate students, and have special programs that allow these black young kids to apply for innovation support as far as many of the research projects are concerned. So for us, the focused investment in that area is in the SWIP environment and the SWIP funding that goes in there. But I'm aware of many initiatives coming from the university environment, and of course our colleagues here are also doing good jobs in that particular area. The next question on my list, and please help me if I missed something, the percentage of the Grand Challenge research investment that we fund. The answer is it's variable in different areas, different kinds of Grand Challenges. The biodiversity sector, I think I indicated that there are other departments that invest in that area and we make a focused contribution. There are other areas of the Grand Challenges like Southern Oceans and Antarctic research that for me is problematic. The contributions that come from other departments are really not research focused. They actually fund logistics of managing our vessels in the Southern Oceans. They fund the logistics of keeping staff on Sinai and Marion Islands and so on. But there's no focused research investment. The only research investment in the area that comes is through the EST. The idea is that there needs to be a collaborative partnership, that they fund the logistics and the EST funds the science component. But the level of investment, if you really want to be, and this is part of our concern, is the politics of the Southern Oceans and Antarctica has become such a major issue globally for fisheries regions and climate change and all sorts of other reasons, that I think it's an area that we have to step up our profile as a nation to maintain our level of visibility in that particular environment. And what we're doing at the moment is not enough. We have some very aggressive role players stepping into the Southern Oceans. Japan, India, other people that come from many other parts of the globe are stepping into the Southern Oceans very aggressively. And our concern is that our efforts there are slightly uncoordinated, are at a very low level, and are not being used, not using our resources in terms of vessels optimally to actually drive the science. We feel that there should be dedicated science voyages that focus on the science mission. the moment we have no susceptibility, essentially what happens now is that we have a logistic mission which serves the southern oceans in Sinai and Marin Island. Scientists are welcome to go on the voyage. And that doesn't deliver good science. All that does is just give people a berth to beg on a predetermined route or a predetermined mission. And then I think we're losing out strategically. This is an area where we should have a geographical advantage. And I'm not sure we're using it to our best. I think that's the major concern there. The other area is about grand challenge investments. I think astronomy is pretty clear that we probably the only big investment area in that area, but there are issues like the energy, sustainable energy sector and so on, where of course many other departments are on board. So again, we have to deal with the nuclear industry and other departments in the very well. I don't have figures, but it's a very interesting question, and I think we should do an analysis like that, get a sense of what proportion of that grand challenge area we actually invest. The SKA spending, what's happening there, you asked about the long-term stability and the decline that you've detected there. Remember, the SKA spending is rather complicated. South Africa is committed to building a mega, which is a 64 dish antenna that was raised. And just for the other question from one of the other members, the antennas we built for the MECAT are fundamentally different from CAT 7. Remember what we showed you with the CAT 7 was a central fed antenna, and there was the receiver sitting right in the middle of the dish. The MECAT is only an offset antenna, in other words, so that the receiver is to one side of the dish. So it's a completely new design. So we have to demonstrate, first of all, whether it works. And so that's the idea of the first antenna that's going to be built and developed by the end of the year. And certainly, I'm happy to extend the invitation to the BBC members and let them see what's going on there. I think they'll also be amazed by what's happening in terms of the steel construction that's going to go on the site. So certainly another visit may be appropriate, and we'll put that on the calendar. But the spending issue is that we committed to building 64 dishes. Those dishes will be completed by 2016, we think, to say it today. And that means South Africa's investment will decline in terms of our spending in MeerKAT. After that, MeerKAT will become a science instrument that has to be run, and a little operational budget will kick in rather than a bold budget. Is significantly lower than that. But, and I want to just put this on the table, remember that there's already an agreement with the International SKA organization that the MeerKAT will form part of phase one of the International SKA. So at some stage between after 2016 and 2024, when the SKA is fully built, ideally, there will be a transfer of the MeerKAT facility to the International SKA organization, of which we South Africa will be a member. In other words, it will then become a truly international project, funded through the international system, of which South Africa will be expected to make a contribution. That contribution, or anything like that, is not included in any of these figures, and that may also increase substantially, but we're talking about 8,000 accounts rather than 64. And so I want to just be sure that we understand. It's a phase out of the South African contribution in terms of the MeerKAT, but not necessarily in terms of the escape. That's on the part.
Thank you for the chair.
The next question about the cutting edge equipment is lying on that graph that you've detected. If you look carefully at the graph, you'll see that what you have is a long-term trend for a slight increase. In other words, between where we are now, but there's a peak in the middle, so it brings it down. And that peak was due to focused infrastructure investment in 2010-2011. So it bumped it up and then sort of fall down to the baseline, and that's the impression it creates, unfortunately. But that one-off injection was a really valuable contribution, so it's not like that, put that on. Many of the questions that you ask also is about the spikes in funding, and they're prevalent in a number of places that you highlighted. Where do they come from? Essentially, there are two contributing factors to this spike. The first is the impact of these sort of one-off injections of funds. In other words, if you inject funds and it goes up and it looks like it comes down again. It was a short-term injection that made a difference, but it's also not sustainable in the future, and so we have to fall back to a baseline creep, if you like, in that particular area of injection. Then there are some areas like the emerging research that you identified where there's a significant spike in investment was foreseen in the rollout over the next 2 or 3 years. And that's the area, for instance, when I said about the focused investments on black and female scientists who want to make sure they grow their careers and place them within the science sector aggressively, so they have a career option there. The departments, together with Treasury, see the focused investment in those areas. So some of those spikes are driven by strategic intent. In other words, you want to invest there because it's going to make an impact and drive the system investment. And that will then be sustained for the future. And that's a long-term investment, so we're not concerned about that sustainability. We only want those sort of one-offs that create a very different scenario that we have to deal with. There was a question about the vacancy of the National Facilities at this stage. Just want to place it in context. Remember, last year there was a document produced by a ministerial review committee to look at the whole science system. And one of the questions that they raised there is about the future placement of National Facilities. Should they be with the National Research Foundation or shouldn't they? Should they go elsewhere? We've had follow-up conversation with the Department of the Minister in this regard. The Minister has told us now that we are going to, that the NIH will be hosting National Facilities in the future. As to which ones they are going to be and whether they're all necessarily going to remain with the NIH is a conversation that we'll have to have. Some of them may be better placed elsewhere and then we need to place them elsewhere. But we will always, I think there's an indication from the Minister that we will have a portfolio like that that we're going to have to manage into the future. Until quite recently, it was unclear as to whether we actually are going to have the portfolio to manage into the future or not. So our view was not to fill the position long term for a job that may actually evaporate in the context of that recommendation. Now that we have some clarity, I think we're going to have to rethink about how do we deal with that position into the future. In terms of the management, there were some questions raised about how effectively can we manage that. I've been acting as the head of those few national facilities outside the astronomy area. In other words, it's about 3 to 4 of them that I have had to manage by myself. So we picked up the pieces and made sure that we kept them going as best we possibly can without appointing additional staff in the light of this long-term uncertainty that was on the table at this stage. So there's a question asked about the astronomy facility and the secondment that we have there. We've seconded a physicist from the University of Florida, Professor Chetty, who is now acting as the group executive for astronomy. And I think that there's some rather interesting developments in the area of astronomy. One of the long-term strategic concerns that was raised by the Ministerial Review Committee and other reviews over a period of time is that the investments in astronomy that we're making are so large compared to the rest of the system that the National Research Foundation may start looking like an astronomy agency rather than looking at what we should be doing, which is doing what we ought to be doing. And I think it's a valid concern, and I think we all recognize it. And I think the Minister and the Minister's predecessor recognized it and said, we have to do something here. So there's a recommendation, and I'm going to leave the Minister to announce it. Anything that we need to rationalize a little bit the management of the astronomy environment. So I think with that said, I wouldn't want to steal the Minister's fire in this regard, but I just watch that space and you'll see that there's some steps in the right direction, I think, in terms of rationalized the management of astronomy vis-a-vis the rest of the facilities in short.
Thank you.
sorry, if I can read it on up. Why would you not find permanent conservative, because astronomy is very well established here in South Africa.
We are waiting for the minister to make precisely the announcement that I was alluding to earlier, to permanently say that this is what we're going to do with that in mind. Then you'll be in a position to make a permanent appointment. It's simply the interim uncertainty that will get us to support somebody to stabilize that environment for short-term, that agreement will run out very soon. And the idea is that we should be appointing a senior executive to be that charge of the whole summer in advance to proceed with each other. So that's the usual state to decide.
I thought you were saying something like DNA in Taiwan. I thought you were saying that that case is really accepted in existence and the vacant post. I thought that is why it's uncertain in this process. And in this other one, astronomy is very well established. Developing SKA, developing the internet, for the very well established since 1820. And so there is no law required to wait for the minister, because the minister has not that way. This is very well established in the other SKAs.
I think, Chair, to just explain that, the issue was whether the astronomy would remain within the NRF or whether it would go outside the NRF. And that was the uncertainty that led us to not to make an interim arrangement. That's I'm going to try and pick up the other issues. Yes, the question of the 10% increase in students at facilities. Those projections are quite conservative, you're right, and we're fully aware of them. The major driver for us there is the supervisor capacity that we have in facilities. In other words, the people that can actually supervise the students if they control them. If we don't have substantial work and recent staff in those environments, it's difficult for us to increase supervisor capacity. So they are conservative in the context of the staffing component we have available to us in that environment, which is not ideal, but that's where it comes from. You also asked about the science advancement overarching strategy. I think the department is working very as part of that team from our side to make sure that we do develop a national overarching strategy for science advancement. I think we recognize that the efforts have been fragmentary and it's diluted the impact of science advancement in the system, and that overarching strategy is quickly to require. I think we have to improve public understanding of science, not the value of science, and I think the I will also allude to a big marketing strategy that we're putting on the table, the design for science idea, which is part of this marketing development approach that the department is trying to put in place. So I think a step in the right direction is being made here. Can I go back to some of the questions that I made to these some of the other members? The tracking issue of students, you asked about what was happening there. In terms of tracking students has always been a problem for us, because when they leave the university system, it was never captured in the NRF systems. People graduate and they leave, and the only system in the country that actually captured the physical graduation of students was the UNIS system of the Department of Higher Education and Training, where they had to, for subsidy reasons, to log the graduation of students. We have had the capability in NRF to actually retrack the students once they leave the university system. What we've now done is we've established a relationship with the Department of Higher Education and Training, so we need access to the human sector that they actually get to that system. For the first time now, we can get through our ID system, log into the human system, and actually find out where those students are, first of all, post then graduating. So we can now track what happened to them. Are they still working in the science system? Are they not out there? And so, for the first time, we now know when our students that we support graduate, in other words, how quickly they're graduating, but also know where they go afterwards, so we get a sense of the impact of the investment that we're making, and that's really what we're trying to get to. And that's why we raised the issue of tracking a number of occasions across the presentation. There's another dimension of tracking that's mentioned in the presentation, and that's in the context of science advancement. In other words, if we have a student that goes to the National Science Week for argument's sake, spend some time there. Does that influence their decisions in terms of the subjects that they take? Does it influence their decisions in terms of the careers that they pursue in the future? That's a very difficult thing to track, because people come and go and say such things. So everybody in her college has been working very hard, looking and saying, how do you track the impact of those sort of short-term interventions in terms of people's decisions as far as their careers into the future is concerned? And they're coming up through some very interesting ways of doing that. And I'd be able to actually just give a little bit of background about how this, that thing is defined.
I think we're making use of, I think one of the questions related was scientists and the impact of scientists. It's an area that the scientists and the Professional Association of Scientists are working quite closely on the relevance, firstly, with the Department of Science and Technology, of indicators for this type of sensitive. Right now we're capturing numbers, and we can show you numbers of public or learners or educators who have actually visited science centers or been to festivals or any of our festivals, but it's long-term downstream effects. And usually a visit to a science center or an intervention in high school is not an only deciding factor and career choice. So actually it doesn't matter whether you have made the major impact to decide, it's also something that we need to do. So we're working in conjunction with the scientists, but also in small projects that Arthur done in the Eastern Cape, is to track learners on projects from the inception of a project. And the one project we had, we tracked them from grade 10. So you've got to start with them fairly early in the system. Grade 10, grade 11, grade 12, so you register, you know, all details of the learner. Where it becomes very difficult is tracking them outside of grade 10, because as organizations, we also not set up and after this, we track you tapping to humans, but you're following them from a different base, which is a school base. So you have to set up internally, and sometimes the only way you can track them is cell phones, you know, and so this is what we're using. And we've seen, you know, I think I presented at the meeting last year, showed you that at least 50% or more of the students were going from those interventions into the first year university. And we've seen where we've lost, you know, where they've changed or we've actually lost them in the system, it's not necessarily that they left the system, but they start to change degrees. And that's not a loss to the system, it's just that they're getting more defined in their career choices. But the tracking is really a mammoth task in what you're doing, from science awareness to actual career. It's not as easy as, you know, as when tracking something into and actually then assigning the decision to and the science center for us, the science center network is the structure that's going to help us to be able to do that more consistently than it's been done. But even in that environment, the number of people blocking is so high. We're going to get quite sophisticated in the methods of tracking people. But every start, I think, can be, you can see those who've been in Parliament. We heard at a meeting at the SAA last week, that, you know, prior to Ian Salton being taken and brought up in Southern, they didn't have a science teacher, and that's a science teacher, qualified medicine science teacher, and they didn't have a curriculum who were taking medicine science. And that has now improved that over that time. I think the number that they've entered for this year is at least 15 matriculants in the area, you know, Southern, you know, that total area, with medicine science. You would say that number is very small, because we have to put it in context. But having been no matriculants of medicine science, just 15 now in the total area, means that there is some impact that we made from having the science there, having the scientists and the work that we've done in the Southern Community Center that has been put together and the Southern Community. So I think there is the evidence to suggest that the work being done on these centers is making.
I think that we are just beginning. It's not a very big effort to make students of the graduation. I'm talking from the experience. See, for instance, Cambridge University has got what they call alumni center. They get down every quarter to the Cambridge from wherever you are, what he or she is doing, and they follow up with this update and everything. And so if Cambridge can train out people all over the world who have been Cambridge, all about you and other leadership people, just be mostly from South Africa.
Point taken. It's a set we just never had the ability to trace them again. How did we have the idea that we can do it? And I think so. We should move on.
And it's a very, very important
exercise,
by the way. It does a lot. It gives you a sense of what we are doing, what we are doing. It gives a sense of the impact of our blood. And you can always any time also use their placement to improve or to upgrade the initiatives. It's a very, very important exercise. Actually, universities like Cambridge, they sometimes even use them because most of them they hold salary for the students to even fund the university themselves.
Wait a second, and we might work on that and make sure that we improve our performance there. The next question that came up that we haven't touched on yet is the issue of the improvement of quality of basic education. I think a number of people raised that. Everybody touched on that in terms of what we're doing. I think we have to understand that what we're doing is very targeted interventions. The Society Science Advancement Work is very challenging. It touches thousands of scholars. Across the system, you saw from the progress that we have there. And the work that's been done in terms of the National Zoological Gardens and so on, and other places where we have strong science advancement initiatives. We do have targeted interventions, particularly in areas where we are operating as an organization. Everybody mentioned the activities in Sutherland that we're involved with. We're similarly involved in Carnarvon, where the SKA project is at the moment. We're funding science teachers and math teachers at Carnarvon School. The project has upgraded the laboratory facilities at Carnarvon School. They've got tremendous social investment from the contractors. The hospital has been rebuilt and upgraded in Carnarvon environment. The community centre is going up, and so all sorts of interventions are happening in that regard. But most of our focuses are really on the dinner lady schools, I think, from the department's point of view, historically. And those are the ones we've been focusing on to make sure that there are adequate math and science teachers in those environments. And we're making sure that they get access to the best possible tuition material. So, on the side, issue is that one of our centres of excellence has funded the books from the University of Cape Town, has made available chemistry kits that they distribute to all the general ed schools around the country. And that comes from a unit that's actually doing fundamental basic research that says they have to make a contribution to the advancement of chemistry across a couple of the school systems. There are some target-focused interventions in that area. The problem is we don't have the resources certainly not as an NRF, but I'm sure that the Minister of Science and Technology doesn't have the resources to actually fundamentally change the level of basic education as far as science is concerned across the country. So we wish we could do that, but we simply don't have those kind of resources to our satisfaction.
Do you have
a
follow-up question?
Just to come back to the biodiversity, I just would like to ask you how close are you with the Sandy and with the animal demographic the ADU, as well as I share your concern about what we're going to do to contain our heritage and to look after, because I know the National Museum, there are only a few people, for instance, who look with the doctor of the scientists, and those scientists are actually aging, not to put it in mildly. And I don't see in young scientists going into that direction. There are some of them, but they know them. They don't actually go and study you touched also on the taxonomy side of it. They don't do it because they're one of the most boring subjects for some people. So that is... Yeah, for most people, my husband loves it, but anyway. So that's something that will need intervention from your side to get some students interested specifically in taxonomy from a scientific level. And then I wanted to ask you about the chemistry kits for the schools. Do you only get to state-funded schools, or can kids that are being homeschooled also access those?
Thank you. The biodiversity, the targeted area that we do find is particularly in the area of biosystematics to try and grow the number of people in that area, but we still aren't doing enough. we're falling behind internationally. Of course, biosystematics is a discipline that is changing. It's changing away from what we call alpha taxonomy to what is considered to be more improved genetic techniques and approaches. So I think in that area, our skill base is actually quite strong nationally, but it's the alpha taxonomy that people are decline, and people are really concerned about. And of course, the management of the collection goes with that. You can't manage the collection if you don't understand alpha taxonomy and what that goes with that. So that is an area that we're aware of, and we're having conversations to try and strengthen that. Part of the problem in that whole landscape is the area, it's one of those difficult areas, a little bit like education if you like, where you have a national mandate and you have a provincial mandate, and you try and marry the activities across the country. Some of the museums are at a national, even a municipal focus, are funded through those mechanisms. And so you probably need to think about this a bit more strategically nationally and decide how do we pull this together in a way so that we don't lose the fundamental capacity of the people's project. That is a problem. The other thing is we have to just mention is that in terms of biodiversity research, one of the areas where the centers of excellence and the research chairs are very strong. And we actually have significant international confidence in that regard. The second question. The chemistry piece. I'm not sure what the arrangement is with that. If you can get rid of it, we can certainly put you in touch with the folks at the Center for Catalysis at the University of Cape Town and find out what the reality is. Issues around the, some of them have been covered in terms of the focus investments you made for females and blacks and just previously. There was a question about the research chair in science communication. Dancing, if you can just do that, please.
Yeah, I think one of the work you've correct, not on the gaps, so just making sure that the question that you asked are covered. The one that relates to how we apply to with regard to female. I think, and you spoke about the growth rate, there's three important developments here. The first thing is that excellence is cornerstone of our funding here. So it doesn't mean because you're black and you feel that's why you're in the first place, because you're excellent in the first place. Our target is 80% black, 60% women, gender. Those are our targets we try as far as possible. However, we find it easier with the gender to meet the target than with the black target of 80%. It's quite a steep target, but we have to give ourselves steps back. Regarding your question on indigenous solid systems and what the investment is, we've doubled the investment from 10 million rand per annum to 20 million rand per annum for a tender in indigenous solid systems which will be located at the University of KwaZulu-Natal with a number of nodes for other universities and institutes at the multinodal model. But what's more important, I think, is that in the new round of 62 chairs, the IPS chairs in the various areas of indigenous knowledge in plant medicine, in indigenous plant use, in intellectualization of African languages, multilingualism and education, bioinformatics of African development, rural agrarian development. In terms of honorable Clover's question about education, etc., what's interesting is in the new round of chairs, we've got chairs in the area of education and care in childhood, higher education, human development, and teacher education. This is an investment that the Department of Higher Education and Training should actually invest in. But DFT has come to the party and is making this investment for 15 years for this change. So that's very, very, very welcome. The question also is raised about why are the number of scholarships not increasing by Honourable Member Smith? And the reason is that over time, your cost of living goes up. We have to increase the value of the bursary. The wages go up is defined every year. And we increase the number of that the value of the bursary is not there for the next step. In response to Honourable Chair's question regarding why one thing is really changing, that was part of the extent of the case. But as we indicated, everyone is running faster than we can run. So it's a moving target change. But we have to keep the target because that will be, we said, we can't change. I thought you just answer to get questions so that the change plans indication are only enough. It's not being a warning.
Thanks again for some of those. There are several issues that were still raised that I wanted to touch on. Somebody asked about client centricity, why are we focusing on client centricity as an organization? This is not a profiting or anything like that. This is simply to provide a better service to our stakeholders, which is the university and the research community out there in the South Dakota. What we want to make sure is that as an organization, when people interact with us and they engage with us as a science funding organization, that they experience the best possible client service in terms of the way that they engage with us. I don't want them to think that the NRF is an organization that puts stones in their way and makes life difficult for them, and that, you know, we have to make sure that we service them in a way that they have a positive experience and enjoy interacting with us as an organization. So it's just a philosophical approach rather than any other particular motive behind that. Your question is around the staff planning, the MP, Stellenbosch, why? That's it, you explain this one.
The function of the supply chain management process. We put up a very detailed specification. We had a number of institutions that were interested. Some of them, many of them did not make a cut because we'd asked for a customized program rather than your normal off-the-shelf program that you can find in public institutions. In the end, we had to make decisions which were based on the willingness of the institution to invest with us rather than to give us an off-the-shelf product. Secondly, it had to be price. The price had to be right. It had to be right for us to buy into the product. And lastly, we had to look at issues of quality and the methodology used. And Stellenbosch University happened to be the one that met all our criteria of price, the methodology, by using real examples in the NRF to deal with real issues in the NRF, and obviously worked with us in customizing particularly the research management module, which is core to the program, which no other university currently provides.
Thanks, Patrick. And then some other questions that were still earlier. The question about the page 54, that the horrendous abbreviation that nobody could interpret. I'm sorry about that. We shouldn't pick that up ourselves. It actually stands for Energy Human Capacity Development and Knowledge Generation, which I had to get from one of my colleagues because I couldn't even remember it myself. So our apologies for that. That we should have explained that in text for everybody. There was another question from the chair that I just wanted to touch on about the graph on slide 30, the flip international components. All we wanted to demonstrate, the chair, is that although we invest in areas like emerging generation, emerging researchers, next generation researchers, there are two cross-cutting instruments that are available to all those categories to compete for. In other words, it's additional resources that can be used for international studies abroad, if you like, as an international opportunity, or for a research program in a third environment may support students as well as senior researchers, so it actually cuts across all the different categories. So what you're saying is that those two baskets of funding are distributed, sprinkled, if you like, across all those other categories in addition to the baseline funding in the EPA. That was the intention of that project. I obviously didn't get it right today, so we can go into the future. No, fair enough. Chair, I just wanted Ganson to respond to the issue of black and female intervention and what we're doing. He's got a list of things that I think that people need to do.
Honourable Member Pankaj, the question was how do we grow the number of female researchers, and especially black researchers? We put in three interventions. One is a very new one that will be announced. The first one is a two-car one. It's a 9-year funded program, especially directed towards black female researchers from members of Harvard University who want to do a PhD establishment in terms of research. The second one is those female researchers who are towards the latter part of their degrees, their PhD degrees. It's a partnership program university whereby we fund them 6 months or half a year so they can leave their job and go to complete their PhD. The third is the most exciting one, which includes the Health Science and Technology with CAR, and that is the Career Awards program. So this is taking people, and remember one of our mandates, the transform the workforce, who have a PhD, who've done a postdoc, but only have stamped themselves as a special academic. They get a full salary for 5 years of 300,000 per annum, plus the research expenses, and they go with this package to the university and say, I'm actually being a member of staff for 5 years. I'll provide with them after 5 years they've gone to the member of staff. So those will be announced soon, and we hope to be able to transform the workforce incrementally through that intervention if you want to do it. So that is important for non-profits to know about that.
Yes, I'm going to answer the question. All the issues end up not coming to mind or finding my difficulties, but from the way that it interferes with
Thank you. And technology, I'm the director of the community.
Okay. I don't think that there is much to discuss about because last time when we were in the last meeting, we agreed that you had to send us a list of ministers or committees in accordance with the criteria that were recommended by the senior solicitor. And having looked through myself, I think that the minister has done exactly what he wanted. Yes, look at the agenda, yes, consider the agenda, equity, yes, look at the race equity, yes, look at the expertise equity, and almost everything, and let's look into all the areas. I'm not sure about the decide to do this, because the agenda, I'm going to decide to do this, but I'm not
Number two. Well, Chair, I know we're in a hurry, and I know we need to adopt this now, but on a procedural note, sorry, on a procedural note, I don't think in our last meeting we formally accepted the shortlist that was presented. So maybe before we accept this, or a variation of this, we should accept the shortlist, then we accept these names or whatever comes out. In respect of this list here, I'm also content with it.
Okay. In terms of the procedures, I forgot it about the last time, unfortunately. I don't have the minutes. I thought that the shortlist we agreed about, then we then directed the department that because of the act wants us to consult directly with the minister after the appointment of the board. That shortlist we agreed, but the minister still has to send us board members which consists of 10 people.
Yeah, we agreed implicitly. I don't think it was put as a motion and both of them. So I agree, we all agree, but I don't think we did it formally. So I'm just saying before we adopt this, we should formally adopt the shortlist. I think, I might be wrong, it's just my recommendation.
I'm asking to you the names that the minister has submitted for consultation with the committee are in front of us. They are 10 of them. Let me read them. It is Miss Helen Brown, Mr. Clark Hendricks, Professor David Ellis Kaplan, Dr. Steve Brennan, Dr. Mangele Meshamagoro, Ms. Kungara Jobe, Advocate Mutasio, Josephine René Fatani, Dr. Peter Terbrand. Is that your brother?
Hey. It's a woman.
Oh, it's a woman, pardon.
No, it's not my sister.
And then Ms. Rosetta Kava, and finally Mr. Mahomet Bruno. That's the list for which, according to the Act, the Minister wants us to consult us about. And if we are great, and I have seen, as I said, it has already spread as we need it. As a chair, I cannot be holding the up and stand according to the other. There. Any more? Support the list of the nominees. Mm-hmm. It must have by you because it's recorded.
No, it's what the sentiment is not quite sure that I pulled the sample in second.
Yes, you propose approval.
Yes,
you
have this again. And in the representation that finished the comments proposed and approval of the
minister. Seconda, Honorable Smith?
Chair,
I should think the second.
Honorable Chair, I also have the minister's account second to the
minister. Thank you very much. This has been asked. It is seconded by more than one minister. That's what is happening.
So you have to present,
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. So the list is approved, so we will then have continue to the news. We'll just also report the list. We'll just put it together for the report to the House. Thank you very much. The next item to deal with is about the briefing by the President on the Africa Institute of South Africa as President. I brought the the oral presentation and the new presentation. Now, what I'll say here is a disappointment. The disappointment according to the presentation that I got yesterday morning, the presentation is almost the same as the one that we had last time. That for some small areas. There are some solely level case in hand and some problems that are. It looks like a person that woke up early in the morning yesterday and decided to simply erase what the doctor was regarded and see the case. And that is almost the same. If we can look at this presentation and that, nothing has changed and you can think of not even part of it because he never entered the only cup. Now, this is very, very, very dangerous. Now, why I'm saying this is dangerous, I've got a pamphlet. This is an advert. This is an advert of a new standard that has been established by HSRC in order to accommodate the incorporation of AIFA in the business and College Center for African Studies. And this center is supposed, according to the presentation for today, they are supposed to be taken through how this cooperation will work in conjunction with the Center for African Studies in the CSRC. Amalgamation and so forth and so forth. Now, with this presentation that I have here, today's presentation, it doesn't talk to that, nor does it talk to any of what is the preparations in the HSRC about the incorporation of ISO. And over and above, I think also that we need to be taken through this act, because now the new act is here. We need to be taken through the act. But many questions that the which members last time asked, which I'm asking, I was calling to go through, which are supposed to be answered here, and then, of course, none of them is answered because this all presentation has been brought to the TC, without any change, except the questions. So, can you just take us through some of the questions that we have all there, and then answer in cooperation?
From the presentation on the 19th of September, members raised certain issues that were only partially responded to by the department. The processes were still in progress. The first was raised by the work of the committee, who wanted to know about the public comment period and framework. And the presentation for today did not have any information relating to that, if any comments were received, if they were incorporated to the role, or if any comments were rejected, and why not. Another member wanted to know about the current staff complement of the Institute and the building all staff of AIFA will be incorporated into the HSRC, but a member specifically wanted to know also about whether that would include the administration staff, such as the human resources manager, a publications director, and these are staff members that the HSRC currently already have in their corporate governance structure. In relating to the advert, the chairperson just spoke about, they just wanted to know how the current structure of the council would be revised, and they also wanted a preliminary organogram to be presented to see how AIFA would be incorporated into the HSRC. And in light of the advert for the African Studies Centre, the details attached to that. And then, one of the reasons that for the incorporation was from the review was poor corporate governance was stated as why the Institute is not performing as expected, but the goals that are stated there for the memorandums are just the goals stated that the spark, the current spark complement for remaining the current ID volume for the next 3 years with its structure and spark structure in sitting as E. So I would also like to know how this addresses this issue of governance and its staying focused on its research mandate.
So there we are. So that is exactly why when we went from the point of entry to the night here, we were from the region on the advisor and my parents very good to go and let out by one account. Actually, I've been approached by some chefs we had not been lobbied by members of ICE. So this is a very, very critical incorporation which is going to bring a lot of controversy, and if it has been not handled properly, it's going to be a very bad discussion. And I'm afraid that we have to do things correctly. Chairs here were coming to me angry about incorporation, why it is recognized as something possible, it is just possible members of the ICE do not want to be incorporated. And I think the message that they put for us, by you as an individual. And so I'm afraid that now, if proposals which have not been followed in the term of the questions from me, and also the committee has not been stressed or taken through and can satisfy the policy kind of only issue they are going to have a problem. That's why I think my daughter should make her own comment for the staff. Another thing, yes?
No, Peter Chair, in making our comments, are they linked to them? Because in some of the concerns that we have been addressing in question, that I hear the question of this, and then make this in terms of what we have done. Not to say what we have done, but to our respect, but I don't care how to do that.
My problem is that we already have the presentation. They have given us this presentation, which I have already at least from. What we can give them the chance is to account for the flaws that the group has given the presentation. I think that is what we can tell us why all the flaws, and then probably they may have to tell you why the new presentation is not different from the presentation. And so I think that we can give them the chance to welcome.
Is that before we give the opportunity to ask more questions?
Yes. I think we must give them the chance to
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to our own members. Maybe I'll give the way of the text to Chair, just in case that we did present this presentation on the 19th of September. I think the purpose today was to manage the recap on what we presented last year on the purpose we met and the decision that led to sort of the operation and the decision that led to that. And the second part of it was for us to say was that the previous part of the committee was then to go through the things that we normally do assessing on the record being rather than the presentation. So we thought we were not finished like that. But the big purpose of the presentation was to say that the record might be presented because if members will recall that the when we came to the committee last year, it was really our own request because we wanted to appraise the members in terms of the processes and where we are, and we indicated that once the bill has been signed to country and introduced formally in Parliament, we'll then know this, we'll call this by the following, and hence we use that for the presentation to recap on what we said at that time. And then we went to this section and then clarify the issues that have been in the field where the little bit afterwards, I think I'm safe. The second part is that those will allow my colleagues to respond to the issues that are raised the last time. It's true that we have comments that are raised the last meeting, I'll ask from the set of referrals to speak on this issue of the address made. And the second part is the last time to address the issue of public comments and how we cooperate with those. And the issue of the IAS because I think it was also going to be a matter of what we want to discuss when we go to the session.
Okay, now then, so be it. It's important, as I said, if you know what it is, if you have a budget, you can explain it and follow us, if you think us,
No, thank you. What I'm going to do, I'll just quickly recap on the presentation and indicated, and then I'll ask my colleagues to try to just take us through the green stuff. Normally, Sarah is in the co-president of the group, and Brian will try to help me on it.
Oh, so these are the ones that are with you?
Yes.
Oh, the other ones with the short list?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
No, just as the terms of the presentation I outlined, Chair and honourable members, we'll just look at the background on what I think we have for the repositioning of AISA and the options that the candidates and the outlook of the operation roadmap and the implications of the recommendation cooperation and also the expenses that actually we have followed. As a way of background, the TIA, the AISA X, AISA X was promulgated in 2001, and its administration at the time was under the X, which was under arts, culture, and science technology. And in 2004, the administration and oversight of AISA was assigned to the Department of Science and Technology, which was established, and mainly because of 2001 legislation, you know, promoted a focus on AISA. Being responsible for generating and transmission of knowledge, and I think the Act provided the framework for the economic foundation, which was the main African focus. In 2010, the other institution has reviewed copies of which we have circulated to members. The review with most of the other institutions that we have in the regular IPA review to reflect on the mandate of the institution and whether the performance of the institution is as per the legislative mandate, and if there are gaps, we plug those gaps and ensure that it remains effective. So in 2010, we conducted an institutional review. There are a number of recommendations which were very substantive in relation to the structural reorganization of AISA to give effect to its own mandate. In this case, as articulated by the legislation of 2001, we should focus on this stage. Subsequent to that, the minister has requested the department to consider the alignment of the AISA's role and activities with the GST system. I think what's imperative in this regard is that, for example, certain areas of AISA activities, for example, were found not to be aligned with the GST. I will cite an example that I think the forecast issues of peace and security, for example, which are not part and parcel of the mandate of the DSG. So therefore, the issue was to say how do we ensure that we continue to focus and AISA has to be the research focus and ensure that the kind of areas of focus that we chose are aligned to the DSG mandate, because I think that misalignment created some challenges for development science and technology. So therefore, there were also significant overlaps that we identified between the mandate of AISA and HSRC, particularly after the 2008 review of the HSRC Act. So therefore, again, the question was how do you begin to harmonize the two and ensure that we eliminate overlaps. The implications of the overlaps of functions that have indicated obviously led to a lesser duplication of activities and of the view that also I think we needed to ensure that the deployment of resources is as efficient as possible. And so therefore the repositioning of AISA became imperative. There were three options that we considered in relation to its repositioning. One was AISA to remain as an independent process entity within the parliament to DSG's strategic mandate, which will support the development of African SMC. But all of this, there were implications for this Pasa auction, to say that how we will manage the ongoing Halal prayer set on during the SSRC and also some IAPC institutions. So therefore, that option was not considered. The second one was the incorporation of ISA into the DECO, the Department of Peace and Assemblies, of course, as part of the existing institutional structure. Again, I think we're of the view that the ISA of the CESAR post as defined in 2001 legislation will be limited to what we regard at the time as narrow foreign policy and continental development policy issues rather than outputs. So therefore, I'm more of the view that the third option, because to incorporate ISA into the HSRC would be more viable, because I think the environment within the HSRC would stand the ISA social capacity because it's well established, so therefore you'd be able to have the refocusing ISA into SCI provinces or something into the official provinces. Because I think that effort was done in 2001 to try and refocus it, I think. So we have the view that embedding it within the existing environment would probably provide a much more conducive environment and lateness than the study in place. As I said earlier on, the rationale for incorporation is really to reduce the beginning of the activities to enhance synergies in the two institutions, achieve greater economies of scale, particularly in the African wide network, and strengthen the research capacity. Because again, we would want to make investment in areas where within the African wide network where we would probably not provide significant support and funding. So I think if we work collaboratively, it becomes much easier. And also I think as highlighted in 2008, I SFRC managed and indicated that since the mind of Muslims expanded to the strong class of effective medicine in the continent, and the only for us to amend the SFRC Act to accommodate the incorporation of ISA. We therefore set up the minister set up an incorporation management committee which was established to oversee the process and there were representatives of ISA and HSRC management in the Pastoral Committee, which was assisted by the DSG colleagues. In this regard, the DSG was represented by the Indian Corporate Service, was on the right and the other. So therefore, a roadmap and project plan for the incorporation was adopted and we started implementing it last year. There were milestones that achieved and shared, as you correctly said, we did indicate some of those milestones when we presented this synthesis particular party to the committee and the number of committees that were established to manage those operations. Obviously, our view is that inside the HSRC, ISA will be a research agency within the HSRC, bearing its own name. And we had an understanding that the issue of the Center for African Studies will actually put in abeyance because of the particular incorporation. And I think when we say we'll speak to that issue that because when we picked that up, I think we raised it with HSRC, and I think there was a strong implementation to that. We also agreed that as part of the connect that ISA will retain the grants and that the funding for the budget for ISA will be referenced for the MTA period to ensure that all the projects that are currently continuing will continue to be funded until the year period expires. And therefore, I think it's time the incorporation to finalize that rules, and I think the HFRC obviously will begin to now craft a new direction for ISA. And therefore, so the survey of ISA employees after the activities will happen, will transfer to HFRC once the legislation is approved. Matt also indicated in this regard, Chair, the only question that was raised, all the employees in this regard, there are no employees that will be left outside this incorporation process, will be transferred. Because when the functional arrangement is indicated within the legislation, when we go through it, it's very clear in terms of what will happen to employees at certain places of ISA. So in terms of the legislative process, we therefore took the proposal to cabinet in 2012 February, and the cabinet approved the proposed incorporation. We then started the process of writing the brief, which was published for conversation in August 2012. Again, my colleague Brian will make reference to the process that we followed, particularly on the public comments and how we incorporated those during the public completion of the public comments process. Once that was completed, we then took the bill back to cabinet, which was considered on the 27th of February this year, and the bill was therefore certified by the law advisor and introduced to parliament on the 15th of March 2013, and today we consider by the portfolio committee. So therefore, that in terms of that consideration, we will now take the committee through the section of the bill that's presented and introduced to parliament on the 15th of March 2013. I will now share hand over to my colleague Brian to take the bill. Before we hand over to the legal to present clauses, can I not speak to the presentation that's being made? Because I've got some concerns arising. I'm very puzzled by the presentation, to be honest with you, because we're sitting with a number of documents that don't seem to be speaking the same language. Now, I'm not against the incorporation or for the incorporation. I think you want to understand where you're coming from. And what's being presented to me simply doesn't make sense. So, but it would be that I just don't understand what you're saying. So let me just start with your size is not numbered, but if you go to slide 3, you start with a sentence which says, the one before that, yeah, 2010, there. Institutional review of AESA recommended substantive structural reorganization to give effect to the core business. Now, the way the rest of the presentation is worded, you almost think that what follows is aligned with what comes out of that institutional review. Well, I haven't seen the institutional review until now, but when I read it, the conclusion doesn't speak to this, what you're doing at all. What it says, like in the 30th page 32 of the review, which is the conclusion for the recommendations, and when it gets to AESA's mandate and key location, what's it say this? It says here, this is a recommendation for the institutional review. There are two recommendations, but the key one I want to mention here is that, I quote, AESA remains located within the Department of Science and Technology as a separate and independent tax council focused on the African continent. That's a recommendation. It doesn't mention anything about options 1, 2, and 3, and we'll ditch option 1 and ditch option 2 and go for option 3. It says it should remain a separate and independent tax council. Now, I don't know if you're referring to the fact that the structural issues that this report probably refers to, but it seems to be a bit disingenuous to take the key locational recommendation, which is the raise on desk of the bill, and not refer to the bill. I find it quite weird, to be honest with you. So the way I read this institutional review is, the DST says it should stay where it is. And for some reason, there's another proposal which says, no, it shouldn't remain where it is, it should go to the SLC. It might be a very good decision. I'm not disputing the logical decision, I'm disputing the logic of how it's presented. When I've got this document, it seems to say something completely opposite. That's the first thing. Then on that same page, and this is what you told us last time as well, it says here, this is the rationale for the move, the third bullet. Significant overlaps exist between the mandate of AESA and HSRC. Now, I took that to mean that the HSRC is involved in work which overlaps with what AESA does, vice versa. Which doesn't seem to make sense. A, in terms of the recommendation of the report, it says they should continue as a separate council focusing in Africa. But also make no sense in light of the evidence that has just been shown to us. And I know you said that you know, you were caught by surprise by the states of the thing. But what it says in the advert, and this is from the HS, it says, the newly established African Studies Center. Newly established. So it wasn't there before. So it wasn't there before. What is the significant overlap that existed? It seems to me that they're creating the significant overlap. There wasn't an overlap before. There might be an overlap in the mandate, but the HRC wasn't pursuing it. But now,
at the operational level, HSRC is saying, oh yes, we have a mandate to the Africa. Let's operationalize that mandate by creating the African Study Center. And bingo, they've now created it. It exists. It's not to be created. They're just looking for a head, but it exists. So it seems to me the third bullet there is also highly problematic to me, that I don't know whether the statement that these overlaps existed is particularly useful in terms of the way we're going forward. I find this whole thing. And therefore, the statement in the next slide, that the repositioning of AESA is imperative, doesn't seem to flow from those two bullets beforehand. Then you talk about the rationale of incorporation to include things like duplication, reduced duplication of activities. But it's not going to reduce duplication, because these guys are establishing African sector, these guys come into them, and they both want to continue. So it seems to me that reducing duplication, you're going to have more duplication, because now AOC are going to be doing something that they weren't doing before. Perhaps you keep on the old guys carry on doing what they were doing. Yeah, so you also say it's going to strengthen AESA's research capacity. But here it seems that AESA is going to disappear. Okay, after the NTEF, it will be merged into a new structure. So, you know, when I was listening to the presentation and to the stuff now, the kind of feeling I've got, and maybe I'm completely wrong, is that the rationale of this merger is not so much to do with the overlaps and the stuff, but simply it's another way of get rid of the council and have a new council. It's a governance issue. But I don't know, that doesn't seem to make sense to me. If that was that simple, then simply say that. But I'm just a bit confused, that's what I'm going to say there. The points being made don't really kind of 100%, you know, I mean, even the bullet here says, since the HRC mandate was recently extended to the focus in Africa, recently extended. So when this was done, I presume that focus didn't exist. There was no overlap. The overlap's come now. It may be a very good reason to merge them too. I'm not saying it's not, but, you know, the story seems to be a little bit incomplete, that's all. Thanks.
Now this becomes more confusing.
The previous presentation of the 19th of September last year referred to focus on research output being largely unsuccessful. Now this wording has been deleted. Why? And also on one of the slides, the potentially destructive competition. Why were these wordings, according to also documents that were made why were they removed? Then also regarding the documents, that's exactly one of my questions. On slide 4, I started numbering the slides on the first page. So the fourth page of your new presentation, the records the institutional report, I asked, where is this document? We received it this morning. It's impossible to go to a document.
I also see it now. I don't know
if
what it is.
I have to put it on the phone. See, the speed record is very clear. They picked up this very, very crucial bullet regarding the recommendation, which is quite contrary to what your reasons are for. And then also on page 4, the last bullet, the significant also, I also want to question the overlap as being the reasons. Are any other reasons? Might be the report, I didn't have time to read it. What about the performance of AESA? Was it so bad? If I look at the budget of AESA, it increased spectacularly over the past 13 years. The salary package of the CEO virtually not even doubled, it increased spectacularly from 150,000 to 1.5 million.
I can, from institutional memo, I can tell that
Was it very bad? Okay, but we need to know this. And but in any case, if the budget and the package of increase, there should have been a performance according to me, and I need to know what the answer on those questions are. And then on your top slide, you refer to the staff communication. This is communicated with previous staff members of ISA who are current professionals. I'm referring to the contribution to the medical aid. I received letters in this regard, which is absolutely as shocking information, which I am forced to ask questions of. And then regarding, there's also the retainment of the ISA brand, that it means ISA the name, and ISA the name, as opposed to African state. I'll conclude with my last question.
Thank you. Just a short question and then a recommendation. On this Sunday Times address of the 17th of March, with the application date or carrying date the 31st of March, it says here that the head of the African Studies Centre will also serve as the executive director of the African Institute of South Africa after the piece of legislation has been passed by Parliament, as it is a safer company, as if we all got a part of it. That's actually a comment, a question. And my recommendation will be Chickerson, that we sent him back, because the presentation, as Honourable Smith said, and this document that we received this morning, and your institutional memory of them feeling badly, and what my honourable colleague Corbett Lawrence said about the interesting increase in salary, something is not right. Something is severely wrong, and they should come back and tell us the truth about what's happening. We are not supposed to sit and second guess every document that we get. We are supposed, as our role is an oversight community and a legislature, because this is the law that we are asked to deal with now and to repeal. We are supposed to have a truth before we can make amendments to legislation. So I would recommend that you send them back.
I just had a question. I'm just also just a bit confused. No? As I understand, the bill is disestablishing it, but the added liability is moving across the HSRT. But in terms of your presentation, it says we'll be a search entity within the HSRT bearing their name. So that seems to me, I can understand disestablishing a council, but the institution, according to presentation, is going to continue within another organization. That seems to me that what you have is a bill that transfers the reporting management council stuff from one to another. But your bill is disestablished it. Whereas the presentation is not being disestablished, it's being relocated. That's not the same thing as disestablishment, to me at least. It's simply moving from having its own council, independent council, being managed by another council, called the HSRC. The HSRC, according to the presentation, will continue. I'm not sure whether that means that it's going to continue, from your point of view, simply as a temporary thing, the remainder of the NTEF, say, with the remaining budgeting. So you're saying it's going to continue bearing its own name until that point, thereafter something else will happen, or whether it's going to be a permanent arrangement, or whether, as HSRC thinks, it's going to merge with something else, in which case it won't be its own name, because it's here, it's going to merge into a new organisation, headed by Hitler's focus, you think.
I think I'll be here for that.
to other members for questions of clarity. We'll try our best to provide all the answers to the questions. Just to indicate, the first question relating to the institutional review of 2010, which the others referred to. There were recommendations that they contained in the report and not submitted, but I think in terms of carrying out or taking those recommendations forward, it's a prerogative of the minister to say that these recommendations are on data and these recommendations I will not take forward. So really, it's that rationalization process, because in the institutional review recommendation, in most cases, it's not sort of a directive to the minister to implement. It's a report by an independent committee that makes those particular recommendations to the minister for minister to consider. So in this case, that's the recommendation that you make in reference to the location at DSG and was not considered by the minister for the report. Sends the proposal that we have to the committee. The second... The committee, I just have to plan myself a panel that was appointed to conduct the review and just have to keep going through this. This is the list of respondents. I'll have to get the list of respondents. Maybe Dr. Fischer might be called at the time versus to the chair. To the chair right now. I will not be, I can't get remember the names of the panel members, but we made it up in the panel and there's the independent of all that I should have.
On the score.
Okay, thank you. No, you see, there are many panels. What are the panels today? Understanding how was it constituted, and were they the aspect of the incorporation of the came from Haido understood more of this, and what was the criteria of this commission?
On a regular basis, when we have institutional reviews with the minister, we look at people with different expertise, government issues, finance issues, people who are expected in the area in which the particular entity operates in. For example, if we look at the portfolio of the organization, the recent chair review looked at people, for example, if we experience the biotechnology area, in the areas which the organization performs its functions. So I think the members of that particular panel were drawn from different institutions and bodies. Was conducted in 2010. So the report is clear as follows. I guess the report was, the purpose of sharing with the members is more of the reference document rather than us presenting this report to the committee. We are not presenting the institutional report to the committee and the outcomes that on the recommendations that came out of the report. I mean, it was really a reference that I am not aware of whether the administration has made after the conclusion of the report whether it came to the committee. And the outcomes of the institutional review. I would have to check that with colleagues if that ever happened. Because as far as I recall, I and then what the members have indicated that they are seeing this document for the first time, I never thought so. My assumption was that members have previously been secret or they are giving the copy of the report. So if that is the case, my sincere apologies, because as I said, it's the document that we presented or given to members for the preparation for this meeting was to ensure that they have drawn a sense to say where the previous process comes from, that the way number of reviews, the last review that was done, and after this review, certain recommendations that we lifted out of the hands that needed to see from the incorporation.
Gee, you see, myself, I feel that before you submitted this program, you didn't write for it, that's why I wrote this contribution, because I think it's important. I mean, you couldn't have circulated this. In fact, it was supposed to have long disappointed to the committee if I thought it was this intention since 2010. And for the committee to succeed for the first time, hey, to me, so this is successful. You want it? Having all that, the data and the detail of it, you wanted the committee to be fair in the evening, what was the least quality of quality, and that, in fact, it's just a different thing. That is my suspicion. And which is a very unfortunate because actually a document that ministers did not find ever in happiness with killing the people of Parliament to call that it was a nature once now. That is the problem. That is my problem.
Chief, excuse me. The review panel, the name of the review panel is on page 2. And then on page there are 6 members. Because the presenter didn't know the members of it, and then on page 55 there's a long list of respondents also. Page 2 of the report, we've got the 6 panel members, and then on page 35 we've got all the respondents also. External stakeholders were interviewed, an extensive list.
I don't know why or where they call themselves to it, but the gist of this circumstance, this review report was certainly not accepted by the Minister's report. And my question is, what does it want here to call the Minister? That is my problem. Because the Minister said, how many years it was, the Chinese are incorporated into HSRC, but they, the report also, which is for advising, saying that is not regular and it's too far. And we are supposed to repeat this institution and establish another one on in an act of parliament, which is a public here, all nonsense of people. And so I do not see how we can proceed in the way it is myself.
Because if you go to this man, you can go to government.
of the section and I was going to take that what gentleman was there who was talking to on options to avail. Now why are we given a document late in the day and the presentation is not well, those options that I'm actually referring to are there. And there are so many issues that are being about each and every option. Now, I don't want to come to a conclusion, but because AISA and now is resisting to be incorporated to HSRC, they still want to be on their own. I think as people that are then going to accept this, we can accept something that at the end of the day is going to come back and permanent is going to be seen as either represent or minister is going to be perceived as that he has not given the committee the true reflection or there is something that AISA is resisting. Now, I want to make a proposal to change that effect. Because the more Mr. Mabuso was responding, the more I was, I wanted to say, can he stop and the guy from the legal department make us to understand. But even that, I'm not going to be more confused. So, we are given the document today. We are to give a go ahead. How are we going to do that when we are not quite clear? And for me, that I want to show the people that they must come back. But the legal, the gentleman from the legal side must also reflect to us the implications. We have never accepted the technology left to portfolio committee give us in order to address. But it's the second time we are met with such a challenge with AISA, if I move it, just move it. And all of them go back. What is it that is in this? And as far as the we must know who has to account. But we must assist that people that have got that responsibility and expertise to assist around, I emphasize on this, is AISA resisting to be incorporated to and I. If you read it between the end, those things that we have very and sit down and go through this. What is the monster that was really doing here? If I did it right, then finally.
Now, as you know, the institution member, okay? When we are confronted in a situation like this, where there are many interpretations in terms of the act, in terms of procedures, in terms of the constitution, what can only be done? We invite our parliamentary law advisors. And then we also invite you to bring also your law advisors in the department, like the legal services. And when you come back here, because there's nothing that you can make use of our advisors, when you come back to this government, I think, where you go and you look through this and align it, and try to produce something that is considered by meanwhile, we will also keep these documents to our advisors in hand so that they look through and they see if the constitutionality of the whole thing can be defended. And there is no way in the format in which RTS and OS represent that we can come with it. More so because AISA, there is a lot of even now we have a problem because it's just interesting to incorporate it. I've been approached already by some people who have not been here in Parliament. Very similar to that they must convince me that it should not be incorporated. But unfortunately, I've been still moving on to this problem. And so the reality is that it's not a small problem that we're dealing with here. We're dealing with serious problem if we ever to say we push that. We need to be very well focused
we need to bring something that is very well aligned and consistent, and then we also need to use our advice to inform advice, because I know it. Okay, that's what I'm getting from. That's what I'm getting from.
So, I fully agree with the suggestion of Honourable Pierre Blanche and Honourable Bula, but I would like to add to the document that Renee Osborne sent to us the day before, and the second and the third page under the heading Issues for Consideration and to share the questions, but before the questions we also have referring to the previous presentation as opposed to the current presentation. I would like to suggest that the department give us a written response on these issues for consideration, so that we deal with those as well as the reports before we come back to the committee. Thank you.
Yes,
another
one.
Thank you, President. This is the 2010-2011 report. I will soon then have to also come back to the 2011-2012 report.
That's a date in which it was done. So it's not a yearly report, it's just a report, and that's the date through which it was done.
No, sir, remember, I think we need to contest that we go on to my other part, that the members, particularly in terms of that report, the institutional view, because it was our concept view that the members have benefited from the report.
Very senior member of the board of vice, and also Can you do my way? I said, I wish I don't want to teach. I said, no, but to argue, I have a history of myself. The meaning of what I say, most of it I have lived from knowing how I try to argue. Because the time I said, no, it's you for quiet. You see? And it was such a very hesitant. It was at a very devastated situation. And there were so many irregularities. I do not know. So Aisha is not operating. There were many members of Aisha that sometimes came to say why this parliament is with Aisha in Dallas. Some members who said they were prepared to come before the Congress of Parliament because they were not hiding. You know, the way Aisha was operating, people being given money to go and research in Africa, they go to their homes, and assign other people, other professors to do the research there for them, and so they go and get the rest of the money. Big holidays. There are so many things that we know for Aisha. And Aisha has moved a very good district for our government. Since it was that over by the other probably during a very big was going across, he had focused on Lila into Africa. Now we are normalized at all. So you can follow it simply and simply has to a waste of millions of system. Unless it is elected and incorporating and in the common systems in the Eastern. Now even now the better incoming of the Eastern City. It's just to recognize the environment selected. At the end, yes, the community party. And I think it's a problem because the case is a difference. And so to deal with the deal of this major, it's very seriously going to challenge us as parliament to get up with this full strength and cooperate so that it was.
Just a small thing, secretly. The bill was published for public comment August 2012. You haven't given us, I'm assuming, a fan to bring us the outcome from the public consultation process. What did you receive and how are you considered?
Right, I think we are
very careful
in that you will have to
I have a request to share. I don't want to assume that GST is not doing, there are entities that say GST is not doing something. It's like as entities are doing. Now, I want you to convey this issue to the director general. I think we are on the side and not comfortable. Some of these institutions are in traffic institutions in the country of property. I think the investment in it creates partitions which may not be the questions that may take time to correct. So it is the essence of it involved. People are doing our very quick. To manage, to monitor, was also about its integrity and its leadership to its entities. That's all we're going to do. Come back, we'll discuss the Bulgarian reports and finalize. You have to be there.
learn the program of engagement and further development center, we have from all countries to collaborate on sustaining projects of mutual interest. It's a very important thing. This one was around the first strategy working with the development center. So what do we say is that strategy should it be possible that the current government established, that the current government established the communal center in the community, would therefore work for us and carry it to the
government. Yeah, because it's difficult.
Yeah.
If you look at the that page on our page 10, in a sense, the last foot on page 10 is the most important one, because once you've done that, then everything else falls in place. So in other words, if our government and the Bulgarian government establishes a science technology agreement, then in terms of the agreement, these other things could then happen.
Yeah,
like you could then have a program of engagement, then you can identify projects, all in terms of that. So I would be inclined to put the science technology agreement in another way,
right.
And then the others flow beneath it.
So what should happen is number one and get more than the same. Following this, then we put the other combination. Number three, if you look from here and bring it up, where the rest of the same stuff. And even there, and one says an argument, and if it will carry back the new side, there's also what we're carrying back. So the first thing is that we must strongly commend that the current country, I mean the current government established the one side. They don't have time for that, they must first establish it.
We wouldn't recommend that, Chair. We could never recommend that another government establishes a certain ministry. That's why we pray that should they do so, our ministry can assist them. I think, because otherwise it would sound a bit...
They do have their centers incorporated with other departments, which is according to their role of the knowledge. So how do you put that? Because I'm interested in waiting, in which you can send a question to the ambassador. But the ambassador will say to the ambassador that we'll finalize, we'll meet today on Thursday and finalize our positions.
The way of doing it is we can collectively here agree on actual wording, or we can agree on content and ask Rene or yourselves to define the wording.
Yeah.
I've been trying for a second because all this issue about where you put a comma and how you write it can take hours. So maybe, if the first recommendation deals with the science technology agreement, I think the wording here is not too bad. Basically, we are undertaking as a committee to engage the department on whether a science technology agreement with Bulgaria should not be, the merits should not be looked at. So that would be a recommendation. The onus then on us to go and talk to the ministry as a consequence of that. It's easy. Then, we need them to otherwise.
You want to collect that and report to the minister if they don't see.
Well, we could then, once we finish this, just take our recommendation on their own and reply to the minister to say our report included these quality recommendations and here they are. And then say we will follow up on what we said we will do. So we will speak to the department about the agreement, we will speak to the ministry about assisting them if they want it, the ministry. And so we could change it all in a way that puts onus on somebody to do something. It's 10 minutes.
And then? Members asked about the relation such as they have with the state in the positive of the plane to the city that they are cutting for the city and under the river now. He has demonstrated the relation to the city.
The top of page 11, it's very easy to transform into a recommendation. I don't know whether protocol dictates that any kind of thing that we want to recommend here is done through the department. In other words, the Academy of Science of Bulgaria and the Academy of Science of Africa, we could, if we wanted, say, we'll urge our academy to make contact with your academy and initiate engagement. But maybe that's the wrong thing to do. Maybe we should say we would urge our department to contact our academy and then to initiate.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably that way around.
That is different. You must liaise between them and you must introduce our academy to the academy. Why not for exchange and using exchange?
Yeah.
Because everybody is
understanding.
Visit exchange is like we visited the restaurant. I don't know why that thing is visiting us.
Yeah.
Yes.
In Parliament or the state?
Parliament.
Do we invite them? We can't.
No, we can't invite them as and when they can change.
But
how
we committed
acts of politics to the Muslim
community?
Yes, well,
it's
not
up to you,
I mean, we have invited sometimes to the committee of parliamentation, and
I was
also invited.
But Jeff, just we're cautioned maybe, because you know from your stuff, that when you are invited as the chair of the committee to certain things, the expectation is that they fund the ticket, the hotel, and so on and so forth. Now, if we extended an invitation, it could be construed as like, you know, so we have to word that very carefully. You wouldn't want to get the impression that we're going to fund their visit if that's not the case.
But I don't think so, because they're not daily invited us there, but we fund it ourselves.
Yes, well, that's advice though.
Yeah, but we fund it ourselves.
Yes. Yeah, but what I mean is, if the ambassador and then our embassy facilitate his engagement, that's not the same thing as their parliament inviting us to come. I mean, I think. So be a little bit careful on how it's worded, so they don't get the wrong impression. But I do appreciate this invite people, you know, or encourage them to visit us.
Yeah. Because some kind of a suggestion in the wording that if they can't find, will be funded by their own.
Yeah. Well, we can just say that if father meet, they may think of. Coming in and visiting us in the family. It comes to me.
Yeah.
So then they should know that it's there in the family. And they can, because you see, the invitation is very important, by the way. Because then once they get an invitation, then they can go to their family agent and say that they're invited in South Africa, like we have it with us. We cannot, if we're invited elsewhere by a certain committee, then you can go to the street and say, our committee is invited in Sweden, and then the speaker, and then analysis on that in Sweden. And through the embassy, then that will be carried out our first meeting.
But now they need to get to Sweden. I just want to talk to you. If one that's very unusual, can be.
Our fund, so we must be exclusive. I will invite them
the issue of funds, they know when they invite me. Until they come back, I don't know, but if you say if fund commit from which side, you can say something from your side. So we must be exclusive. So I don't need an impression that we, if we ask that we our fund is coming, so let's look into that and then. We must just keep in mind they don't have a portfolio, they don't have a smart put of funding. So we must also be specific when it comes to the invitation.
Yeah, I wouldn't invite it at all. I just mean, like, you know, should you wish to undertake a study tour of South Africa institutions, our department can facilitate funding. You know, it's a sort of generic
wording.
Don't use the word invited. Yeah, just a question, because although I agree with these recommendations, the ones I'm reading as recommendations, like they come to mind in memory. Since we have two engagements with the nuclear people.
Yeah.
The one up at the power station, where they gave incredibly long responses, and another one where we arrived 2 hours late with a heavy rain.
Yeah.
Did we not make some sort of engagement? Things, but I can't remember what it was.
No, it did. We said, because there is a case on the energy development, because Russia is South Africa. we will engage with the method when the time permits. We didn't specify how.
Now, do you remember? I think you asked whether it would not be feasible for some of our technicians to go over for training.
Yeah.
That was what we requested.
Yeah.
And they said, well, they would respond to a formal request. I seem to remember that was one of the issues we discussed. Because they had a specific training program for those Russian reactors.
Yeah.
And then part of the answer was no, that the training is very reactor specific. But then I think you said, well, there's also generic. And
in fact, in the infrastructure program, there is an opinion of probably having Russian also
I wanted to call you to the Belgian ambassador. I have to check
at the last work, the girls are having to move it yes, to engage with them on some of the issues and management on the teaching. How are we going to do that? Are we going to be accepted and committed to that to be recap and look into some of those areas? Because I if I remember myself well, the very important issue that we were never aware of as the bottom of and the presentation we think it is a so that the DSC seems to be more empowered. Whether those are administrative matters which are committed by something and for some very serious good time issues that I think for me.
Yeah, I think when you look at that, we can. I just want to put that down. Because that's political stuff. Yeah, to say what you found in terms of that you weren't in the loop of all the things